Chemist Warehouse is putting a spring in your step with half price off big brand vitamins like Lacmoire, Swiss, Caruso's, Thompson's, Henry Blooms and Manuka Health, all half price. Bioglad, Nature's Own, Naturopathica, Pentavite, all half price. Nature's Way, Ethical Nutrients, Inner Health, Synovus, Nutrilife and LifeSpace, all half price. Plus Wagner and Go Healthy are also half price. Exclusive bulk sizes, retail limit supply, Manuka Honey not available in WA. So for the biggest range of half price vitamins, shop at Chemist Warehouse and stop paying too much.
The amount of domestic violence experienced among the most vulnerable in society is, and the word I'm using here is skyrocketing, which suggests increasing beyond all proportion. And the West Australian justice system is finding it very difficult to manage the issue. Pre-COVID-19, the estimates were that one in four women in Australia experienced some form of domestic violence, with those figures increasing to one in two for Indigenous women. Previously, there were some very, very interesting figures that came out because in some cases, the true figures may never be known. There was, though, a potential way to address the situation, and it was previously raised by Aboriginal Family Law Services Chief Executive Karina Martin. And that's for the WA government to follow a Northern Territory lead and make it mandatory for police attending domestic violence incidents to wear body-worn cameras. What that would do is lessen the need for witnesses to give evidence against perpetrators and may be a step in the right direction. Jacqueline Brown is a family lawyer and certainly had experience in this situation, joins us on the program. Jacqueline, as always, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
Do we have a grip on this? Because we do have areas, we do have groups, subgroups, I suppose, where these figures are disproportionately high relative to the rest of the population. The first thing we need to do is acknowledge that that is indeed the case, don't we?
That's right, Chris. As you mentioned, in the Indigenous population, the rates are really high. In women with disabilities, the rates are higher than women without disabilities. And obviously, women in general have a much higher rate of domestic violence perpetrated against them than do men.
How do we address this, especially in those areas or cultures where secrecy or where the lines of demarcation, for want of a better word, are so much different to how they are in the mainstream?
It is a real issue that we are grappling with, and I don't know that we've got a real answer on how to do that. But one of the suggestions that you've alluded to is that body cameras could really help, because the problem that they are experiencing in the Kimberley region is that even when a case is reported, which we know there's a huge underreporting of domestic violence cases, even when they're reported, often those cases are dropped because the witnesses don't want to proceed because there's pressure from family and friends. So the incidence of matters actually being taken through to a prosecution have increased in the Northern Territory, where body cameras are worn when the police are called to incidents.
It's probably also good to make the point at this particular juncture, Jacqueline, because I know people watch American TV shows and they get the wrong impression. We have this notion that somehow you have to press charges. It doesn't work that way in Australia, does it? The police make that decision.
That's right, Chris. So it's definitely up to the police to prosecute a matter, but they do run into difficulties where if witnesses say that they don't want to give evidence or if they won't appear in court to do so.
Do the cameras go a long way to relieving that, or are they just a better solution than what we have now?
I think they're just a better solution to what we have now. And, you know, a lot of the time the police will get to the scene of a reported domestic violence incident and the event may well be over by that stage and they're then only seeing the aftermath. So, you know, they won't catch everything in all cases, but it will help where there is some ongoing violence still going on at the time that they appear at the scene.
How are we going to effectively deal with this? You're obviously a family lawyer. There, I suppose, are two parts to this. One part may well play out in a family law situation if you have a couple who are splitting. But I would imagine in the first instance, we're talking about circumstances that result in the criminal justice system. So how do we effectively deal with it, especially when you have communities or subgroups where people are not going to be so willing to share what they've seen or to act as witnesses against people?
It's really hard to work out that the problem is, you know, endemic in our society in so many ways, and COVID has made it even more heightened than what it was before that, with the added stress and financial pressures that that's brought to a lot of families. It's just a problem that we have to keep being aware of, keep talking about and keep chipping away at. And the things that are working, we have to support that and fund that better. And the things that aren't working, we have to move on and find something else to try.
Aside from what we've seen in the Northern Territory, which is obviously good for gathering evidence, and that's what I'm guessing it is, it's evidence gathering. If there is a case, then you say, well, okay, here's the evidence you're on, and you're not relying on witnesses. Although I can still imagine that may well have some issues. For example, you could be photographed as having injuries, but in the case of a court case, you have to establish who was responsible for inflicting those injuries. And that sometimes can be a problem, can't it?
It can be, especially if you've got people who don't want to talk or who feel that there's pressure from other groups in their societies not to talk about things. It can become very difficult.
Can people be compelled to talk? That's not saying that they're going to give anything useful, but in that basic premise, can we turn around to somebody and say, well, you obviously saw what happened and you need to give evidence and we can subpoena you to do it?
We can, but in cases of this nature, the police are very reluctant to put people into a position where they're issuing a bench warrant for their arrest to turn up in court or issuing subpoena for them to turn up in court, because often it's the victims who are going to be the witnesses, and sometimes that can just victimise them further.
Mm. What are some of the other areas you think we should look at? I know as a family lawyer you deal with this. What are some of the better ways that we could approach this, in your opinion, aside from what we're talking about in the Northern Territory? Because even though that obviously is having an impact, it is really ambulance at the bottom of the cliff kind of stuff, isn't it?
Yes. We've talked for decades now about how do we solve this problem. I think one of the best things that we can do is talk about it more openly and more freely. We're all aware of what happened with the Hannah Baxter case earlier this year, which was a terrible tragedy. But people need to be aware of, you know, what some of the trigger points are when people are separating. That's often when there's heightened emotions, and that's when people who are going to be a victim of domestic violence are often at their most vulnerable. So offering support at those times can be really important.
See, I can imagine there would be circumstances where it could be particularly dangerous, because if you have ongoing violence from somebody and eventually the person gets out of a relationship, it's probably a given that the person who's been violent is going to continue to attempt to be violent. So we can address that. But if you have a relationship that simply comes to an end, as relationships often do, but there is no history of violence and there previously hasn't been any history or evidence of violence, that's when it can be quite insidious, isn't it? Because somebody could possibly react in a very, very bad way, but there's no previous history, there's no reference point that suggests they might.
Yeah, although that is really a rare occurrence. Even if there hasn't been any physical domestic violence, there usually have been other signs of violence, whether it's emotional, social, economic. Those types of abuse have usually been present in the relationship, although a lot of people might not recognise that those things are part of domestic violence. They certainly are, and usually there is a pattern before there is a big outburst.
So you would say that it's not something that lands out of the blue, or let's put it this way, it would be extremely rare if it did.
That's correct, yes.
Are we getting a better handle on this, in your opinion, Jacqueline?
Look, I think we are, Chris. Definitely there's a lot more talk about it than there ever has been, and I think the more we're open about what's happening and the more we're prepared to talk about it, the more services are out there for people, you know, the better equipped we are as a society to be able to deal with it. It's just a matter of, you know, the right people going to the right places to get the help that they need.
How willing do you find people are to seek help now? Is it something that they're willing to do, or is there still a reluctance? We know certainly in some areas there are, but I'm talking generally now.
Yeah, look, it's very mixed. There are some people, and again, often it's women, but occasionally it's men who are the victims of domestic violence. And I think for men, it's a much harder thing to deal with than for women.
Well, nobody would believe them for a start, would they?
Well, a lot of the time they have that hurdle to overcome, but there's a lot of shame involved in it from their perspective as well. So even if they think that someone might believe them, they really don't want to be telling people about what's happened.
I would imagine, though, for men it would take place in a different way, whereas a lot of abuse towards women would be simple physical, because you're putting physicality up against the other person. It probably wouldn't work that way if it was female to male, would it? It would work in a different way. It would be more psychological.
It can be, but it can come in the form of physical violence as well. I've seen that in a number of instances.
Yeah. See, those are the things, I suppose, that we probably have to come to grips with. Going back to, for example, the Kimberley, is that going to be a much more difficult situation to overcome because there is also a cultural barrier there as well?
Yes. In instances where there are cultural barriers, it definitely makes it more difficult. The Kimberley is such a remote area. They yep. do have a lack of services in general, so that's going to make it harder. There are some really close-knit kinship groups in that area as well. And in those circumstances, there can be a lot of pressure exerted on people not to report things.
Can there be additional backlash? And when I say backlash, where the person actually brings on greater problems for themselves because they report it. So they're not only now having to cope with the backlash that they might get from the perpetrator, they might get backlash from the rest of the community at the same time. Can that sometimes be worse than the incident itself?
It definitely can be, and that's why they're experiencing the problem that they are up in the Kimberley, is that someone, you know, may have had the courage to report what's happened, but then before it comes to trial, they're having pressure exerted on them from friends and family members to not go ahead and give evidence, and, you know, those cases aren't then prosecuted.
Is there an argument to suggest there might be ways to deal with this that don't necessarily involve the justice system? Because I suppose in some respects we have an outcome that we can argue is criminal. We're not going to dispute that. But are the problems, the root causes behind it, more social?
They definitely are very much social causes, and it needs to be addressed at a number of different issues. I mean, violence in any form shouldn't be accepted in society, and we do have to have consequences for it, but we have to be able to be trying to address some of the root problems as well to try and get rid of this issue.
It strikes me one of the great things is communication, that we are not taught to communicate. And one wonders if one of the issues that may come out of the fact that we don't communicate now to the extent that we once used to, that problems like this may in fact get worse before they get better, simply because people can't communicate. And you often see that. If you see, for example, two blokes at the pub having a fight, it inevitably comes about because they can't communicate. If they actually could talk about whatever it was that was bugging each other, it probably wouldn't escalate. But that's a communication issue. And I wonder if communication isn't going to be an ongoing problem until we learn to better communicate, to better articulate how we're feeling, to better articulate why we're feeling that way, and to be able to do it without the other person deciding the punch in the mouth is going to be the result.
Definitely communication is a big factor in it. Control can also be a big factor. There's so many things that play into these areas of domestic violence. There's constantly new research coming out about, you know, the root causes of it, but communication is certainly one of them.
Jacqueline Brown, thank you very much for joining us on the program. Your time, as always, much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Chris. Have a great evening.
Jacqueline Brown's a family lawyer, so would have seen all this stuff at the coalface. And I know that our own family lawyer, John Butler, has often talked about the fact that communication is a big thing. And he believes that we need to be taught to communicate. Now, you tend to think, I suppose, that some of these things, there are some things, in inverted commas, that supposedly come naturally. There are other things that supposedly we get taught. When it comes to communication, John has always argued that we actually need to be taught how to do it. In other words, it's a specialist subject in and of itself. This is how you communicate. And if you think about it, think about people you know. It's one thing that's always stuck out to me, very much so. The people who, regardless of when it was, even when we were younger, all the way through lives, the people who are liable to lash out are people who don't have the ability to articulate what they're thinking, to be able to sit down and have a chat with somebody about what's getting up their nose, or to be able to put forward their argument. So what happens? They find other ways to do it. You can do it physically. You can do it simply by literally smashing people verbally. There are all sorts of ways that you can do it, but maybe it does come back to that fundamental thing. If you communicate, you understand people better, then possibly some of these problems could be avoided. Not saying it's perfect, not saying I've got the solutions, but let's have some ideas. Nobody can complain about ideas, surely.
We all want to be safe on our roads. After all, safety is the reason we have road rules, and we need to abide by them. For example, did you know you can be fined for not keeping left? On multi-lane roads, if the speed limit is 90 kilometres an hour or more, you must drive in the left lane. This same rule applies to any road where there is a keep left unless overtaking sign. To learn more, search Most Asked About Road Rules. A road safety message from the State Government, Perth.